As all of you know, today is Mother's Day. It is a very, very special day because without both the father and the mother, none of us would be here. But it is the mother who bears a child in her womb, who gives of her own flesh and blood and tears at the time of its birth to bring it into this world. Now, the master, many years ago, wrote a poem to his mother. He was very, very much attached to her. And when she passed on, he happened not to be present. And he went everywhere searching for those two black eyes that had been with him all of the days of his life. So he wrote this poem about it. When my brother or my teacher stormed me, in the haven of my mother's two black eyes, I found my retreat. She died and I cried, and I sought those two lost eyes everywhere. I searched in the stars until bedimmed by my tears, they twinkled black eyes everywhere, but they were not those which I lost. There were many black eyes that sought to mother me, but they were not those that I loved. Looking, searching for her everywhere, I found my divine mother, and in her love, I found my mother's love. And in her omnipresent eyes, I found those lost two black eyes. And I found another poem that I thought was especially beautiful, written by Helen Steiner Rice. She writes such beautiful spiritual things. A mother's love is something that no one can explain. It is made of deep devotion and of sacrifice and pain. For nothing can destroy it or take that love away. It is patient and forgiving when all others are forsaking. And it never fails or falters, even though the heart is breaking. It believes beyond believing when the world around condemns. And it glows with all the beauty of the rarest, brightest gems. It is far beyond defining. It defies all explanation. And it still remains a secret, like the mystery of creation. A many-splendored miracle man cannot understand, and another wondrous evidence of God's tender, guiding hand. Because it is Mother's Day, and because the mother represents love beyond all thing else in the human sense, I have chosen a chapter that has to deal with the love of God. It is 1 John chapter 4, beginning with verse 1. Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. Hereby know ye the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesseth that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God. And every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God. And this is that spirit of Antichrist, whereof ye had heard that it should come. And even now already is it in the world. Ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them. Because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. They are of the world, therefore speak they of the world, and the world heareth them. We are of God. He that knoweth God heareth us. He that is not of God heareth not us. Hereby know we the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and every one that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. I think that's a beautiful, beautiful chapter. I want to call your attention to one verse in particular here. It speaks that every spirit that confesseth that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God. But it is speaking, as it says a little bit later here, ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. So it is the human ego, which is the Antichrist. It is Jesus, which means the Savior. The Christ, which means the Son of God, the Anointed One, that one who has gone beyond all things human, who has entered into the flesh of every man without exception. If you will forget what you have been taught in the Orthodox sense and realize the truth that it is the eternal Spirit of Christ, the first and only begotten Son of the Father, as that one came forth from beyond creation and who manifests in every single one, then you will have the universal picture of the real Christhood. Now, down through the ages, there have been those who have given their lives, who have given everything they are and everything they have in service to God. And these have lifted themselves from the human into the divine. They have become the Christed ones in truth, the sons of God. Not just one, but all who received him, said the Christ. To them gave he the power to become the sons of God. We must remember and universalize our consciousness, because there is much bitterness, there is much hate, there is much envy, much strife, much jealousy, and many wars that go on in the name of religion. And yet God is a God of love. It says so in this chapter. And we must remember that if we are to love one another, this includes every man, woman, and child in this universe, because God the Father, the eternal Spirit, manifesting as the Son, the Christ consciousness, dwells in every single form. Many times I hear people who have been here a long time say that they don't know very many in the group, and I think that this is a shame. Because I think that all of you should become acquainted with God in each other. This is the purpose for which we are here. We are all God's children. Each and every one of us are members of his one infinite eternal family, part and parcel of himself. We should love one another. We should serve one another. And we should practice really Christianity, not Christianity, because that in the Orthodox sense leaves very much to be desired. But when you follow the true teachings of the Christ, then this is Christian living, because you are a true follower of Christ and not before. When you segregate yourself, one from the other, when you say my religion is the only one and the other fellow's is wrong, you are wrong. Because every religion is a path by which each soul may attain, or rather may go the way to divinity. There are many paths, and many times on the way up, we try many things because we are in the school of life. And the school of life has many difficult lessons for us to learn. It has many grades. But nevertheless, if you will stick with it, if you will learn your lessons, take your tests and pass your examinations, the day will come when God, who is the master teacher, the master principle of the earth, if you will walk across the campus of the universe, and he will touch you on the shoulder, and he will say, well done, my son. He will give you a special honor, and that honor is to have his name written in your forehead, a new name in God. Because in the human sense, we have the name which is given in Revelations, and it has a number, and it is 666. And it has to do with the consciousness of the six spinal centers attached to the three bodily jars under the seventh center, or the thousand petal lotus of the brain. And it is given in three numbers for that specific purpose, to tell us that while we are in that state of human consciousness, we still have the mark of the beast, or the animal nature within us, the ego sense. This is the Antichrist. And we must overcome that. We must erase that number. I have a letter from somebody who was very involved in the Orthodox faith, and they believe in the literal interpretation rather than as Jesus said in the parables and the symbolic interpretation of it to the extent where they are telling the people of 666 on the forehead and on the arm. I personally have never seen this. I have seen in the forehead of a God-realized soul the form of a lotus. I have seen this with my own eyes. I have seen tremendous light in the eyes and the faces and the bodies of saints. I have seen their whole beings glow because they are solely and totally dedicated to God. Mothers are very, very special in God, because without the gift of motherhood, man would indeed be sterile. He would have no means for creation. He would have no means for duplicating that which is within himself, of bringing forth that which is within himself. And in the universal sense, we know that the mother represents nature, and the father represents the spirit. And we are told that the spirit descended and became flesh. In other words, this body is made of flesh. The infinite spirit descends into each form of flesh. And in man, it descends in the highest possible way, because man alone comes with consciousness, with the power of speech, of expression, in a way that no other part of creation does. And he can therefore consciously express himself and go to his maker. The mother rules the world, in a sense, because it is said that the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. It is at the mother's knee that the child learns the difference between right and wrong. She also learns, or it also learns, from its father. But the father is usually busy out earning the living. And the father represents the intellect more, the wisdom aspect of God. But it is wisdom only when it has become divinized. This is true also of the mother. But there is one thing about the mother. She gave her life in order to bring this child into the world, in a sense, because she went through, really, the gates of hell to do it. Now, they have many methods which make it much more comfortable for a woman to have a child. But in years gone by, this was not so. And children were born into the world with a mother suffering a great deal of pain. She didn't mind that, because when she held that little baby in her arms, the joy of holding that little one close to her, of realizing that this was a gift from God, that it was expression of her love for her husband and for God, and of his for God and for her. It was a tremendous thing. Now, not all mothers are alike. There are some mothers that we can say are not really good mothers, but the majority of the mothers of the world today are good, wonderful people. I am in a unique position. All of you call me mother. This is in the spiritual sense, as though I were a mother superior, a holy person in an order. And this was started many, many years ago. I have heard many tales about both mothers and fathers. I've had people say to me, I can't accept my own mother. I take you as my mother instead. I try to reason with them. I try to make them see that, first of all, they owe the most tremendous debt to their own mothers that could possibly be. Because if it had not been for that mother, they would not have this gift of life on earth. Now, some people even go so far as to say, who needs it? They are so disenchanted with life. But, in fact, they are not disenchanted with life at all. They are not really, not really disenchanted with their mothers, but with themselves and the lack within themselves. Because if they had obeyed the commandment, honor thy father and thy mother, as they should, and as is done in many of the great religions of the world, then they would have no quarrel with their mothers and the fathers. It is the ego sense within them. That one, as it says in this chapter this morning, that spirit that comes up, and it tries to tempt you. It tempts you and it says, I don't feel like doing this. You're always trying to make me do something I don't want to do. But stop and take a good look at yourself. Is what the parent asks the wrong thing? Or are they really trying to help you to become great, to become the highest, the best, a good person, a God person? Are they not trying to help you to live in peace, in harmony, to help you towards success and fulfillment in every single thing that they try to do? You think when they tell you that you can't do something or that you must do something, that they are against you? They are for the real you. They are against this Antichrist within you, that one which you should try with everything within you to overcome. They are not trying to punish you. They are trying to take you to God with everything they have. And it's a strange thing that no matter what you will do to a good mother, how much you hurt that one, how much you make them cry, how much you neglect doing the things you should do about them to repay in some small measure their constant care for you, still they forgive you, still they love you, still they go back and they serve you, and they would even die for you because their love for you is greater than their love for themselves. It is through this human love that we gradually come to this idea of selflessness. And when you have finished serving your human family, then you will be in a position and qualified to serve God's greater family if you have put Him first in all things. Any parent who doesn't teach its child the difference between right and wrong, who doesn't insist that they measure up, isn't doing right by that child. They are loving themselves instead of their child, because they want to make everything pleasant in their relationship. And they're afraid if they reach out and they say, do this or don't do that, that the child will be against them. And there is so much of this going on today. It is as though the children have taken over the world in some ways, and they fail to look to the parents for guidance. But there is a great teacher, and that teacher is wisdom. We often hear the expression, the mother of wisdom. And this is the way the divine works gradually in the mother, and in the father too, but principally in the mother. As I've told some of you, I had the privilege of being with one whom I consider the greatest saint I had met in India this past time when I was there for a year. He was a tremendous man of God. His ideals were beyond reproach. And he was living in a world of utopia because he was regretting the fact that the world today isn't what it started out to be in the beginning, where men's minds and hearts were filled with light, where they had a sense of responsibility to God, to their parents, to their fellow man, and where they tried in every way they could to express themselves in the highest way possible. And he put forth the idea that every single girl child in this world was born but for one purpose, and that was to be fitted for motherhood. Because in accordance with the way the girl is trained, with the ideals, the principles which are instilled in her by the mother and the father, so also will she instill these ideas into her children. And if you will just stop to think about it, this world as we know it, whether we think it is good or bad, is a result of the environmental training and upbringing of every single one there is. Because we are all individuals, and this world is made up of individuals. And until we, if we want to be treated like adults, are willing to act like adults and assume our responsibility, we have no right to request that we should be so treated. We have no right to request that we have respect, that we be given special privileges. This extends to everybody. But he made the remark that the girl was trained only to be a mother. And so when she grew up, she got married. And of course, in India, they do not choose their mates personally, but they are chosen for them by the parents. And this system has worked out very well, because this pushes down the ego sense, the idea of, you have to have a certain thing, because gradually the love of God is expressed no matter what mate you are with. You have to learn to live with that one, because the divorce rate in India is extremely low. It almost is non-existent. And anyone who gets a divorce over there, believe me, doesn't have an easy time, because everybody points the finger at them. The family is the important thing. The family lives together, it works together, it prays together. Above all, it prays together. And so these mates are chosen. Now, this saint's idea was that the husband and wife should come together for the purpose only of having a child. Now, that's a long cry from what we're into in the Western world today. But this is the way it was in the beginning, that you would only come together in the physical sense, not to satisfy your senses, not for the sake of sense enjoyment, but to procreate, to prepare your body temple for months in advance, so that you would be able to bring a spiritual soul into this world in order to make the world a better place. And never were there supposed to be more than three. Now, occasionally, and in India this is of course true, there are many, many more. But this was the ideal in the beginning. And I said to him, well, what part does the father play? And he said, well, the father also has his part. He is the provider for the family. He is the head of the family. He administers discipline. And I said, what about the relationship then of the husband and the wife? He said, it is secondary to that of training the child properly to take its place as a citizen in the world. Now, we look at motherhood in many ways. Everyone who is born comes with a certain destiny. They also come with some karmic pattern from the past. It must be so, because each and every one of us is different. And we come with strange things happening in our lives sometimes. And if it were not that we had at some time or other earned these things, then I'm sure we would have a much happier life than we have. Now, we can earn both good and bad. And karma has been held as like the sword of Damocles over the heads of people by many institutions. But karma is both good and bad. It depends on how you personally use your own free will, whether you choose to be what you should be in God and as a citizen of this world, or whether you choose to follow your own selfish, egotistical desires without thought, without regard for anything or anyone else. If you harm some other individual, if you hurt them, then you have caused an action from you, from yourself, to go forth. And for every action, there is an opposite and equal reaction. Now, you may not get it back in exactly the same way, but make sure that it is a debt that must be fulfilled. It must be fulfilled. And sometime or other, you will pay for it. If you do not honor your father and your mother, if you do not obey, if you do not try to be an integral part of the family, to be as you should be, the father and mother should be the examples, true, but also the children have an equal responsibility. Then the day may come when you grow up and get married, when you will find the same thing to cope with. And then alone, perhaps, you will realize what your mother and father had to go through in order to bring you to this point of consciousness, how hard they tried, how difficult it was for them. And you realize that all the time they were trying to save you the suffering which now you are going through because you refuse to listen to them. This is true. There are many times, because of the things that people do, and certainly I'm no exception to it, people have separated me into lots of different kinds of parts. They cannot bring together the human part of me, the mother part of me, the guru. And they say, well, I can accept you as a guru, but I can't accept you as a human being. Or I can accept you as a human being, but I can't accept you as a guru. But I am all of these things. I was born in the form of a girl baby, was I not? And so I grew into childhood, into adolescence, into adulthood. And so I became a young girl. I became a sweetheart. I became a wife. I became a mother. I became gradually an intensely spiritual soul dedicated to realizing my oneness with God. And then I was made a minister. Then I was given the title of Yogacharya, which means master of yoga. And so now I am taken by guru by many all over the, as guru by many all over the world. And yet some try to separate me, but I am just me, one person. But contained within this one person is all of these things. All of these things. You cannot separate me from myself any more than you can separate God from God. There are so many people that say God is here, but he is not there. I can't stay in the world and find God. I must go to the mountaintops. I must go to the caves. I must do this. I must get by myself in the quiet of the forest. But there is no place where you can go where God is not. And where is the most tremendous challenge? Is it in running away from that which tempts you? Or is it that which enables you to stand right where you are in the midst of the greatest temptation, with the greatest opportunities that come to it, and to rise above it, straight and strong? Because if you can do this right where you are, no matter where it is, nor what God puts before you or you put before yourself, and you can rise above it, then no matter where you go, you will be equal to withstanding all of the temptation that anybody could bring you. Because why? Because you will have found your real self, which is God within you. And that self is absolutely omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient. It is equally present everywhere. And when you find your real self in the individual sense, then extend your consciousness until you become one with that universal sense. Until no matter where you look, you see God everywhere. You see him expressing as the mother in nature, as the sun, the moon, the stars, the earth that provides all growing things. She bears the burden for creation in her bosom, does she not? Just as the human mother bears the burden for the creation of the child in her bosom. So it is the same way in the universal sense. In the Christian religion, we do not stress the motherhood too much. We speak of the Virgin Mary as the mother of the Christ. And this is true, and it is true in a virginal sense in a far different way than we have been told in a historical sense, because the reason it is a virgin birth, it happens within yourself, within each and every one of you. This virgin birth takes place when the Christ child is about to be born. The word Mary is a blessed one indeed, because we are told of the Mother Mary. But we have that Mary gland within us that carries the Christ seed, and it deposits it in the manger within ourselves, and it deposits it right below the star of the east, which is right in the center of the forehead. Let's start finding out the truth of the things the way they really happen. I could not tell you this truth if God had not lifted me up and shown it to me, if I had not paid a tremendous price for it, because it is a fact. Now, the mother, the divine mother, is called by many names. In India, they worship the mother in many forms. But one of the greatest is the Mother Kali. I remember that I heard years ago a story about Master, my guru, when he was a very little boy. It seemed that he came with a great consciousness of God. And those of you who have read the autobiography will remember that he had the memory of previous incarnations, of himself being a yogi and of meditating. And so he had this deep devotion even as a child, and he went around many times with his eyes closed, and he'd bump into people and things, and he was always looking at the spiritual eye, but he had this deep devotion for the Mother Kali. So he would gather his little friends around, and he would talk to them about the Divine Mother. He would speak of her wonder, her beauty, her splendor, of her sympathy, of her compassion, and he would inspire them to seek her also. Many times they would go to the forest and they would sit down and they would meditate, or they would walk hand in hand by the Ganges. And so all of them knew how much he felt about the Divine Mother, because as the Master said once, and I can still hear his voice, the Mother is closer than the Father. He always said this, because the child turns to the Mother, and many, many of the Indian people worship God in the form of the Divine Mother rather than in the Father aspect, which they consider more difficult to deal with. And so, on this one particular occasion, one of his friends thought he was going to please him very much, and he came to him and he said, "Guess what?" He said, "My brother, let us all go." He said, "I know how much you enjoy worshiping the Mother Kali." But for some reason, Master was very indrawn, and he refused to go. And they said, "Come, you must go. Haven't you been the one who has been telling us how wonderful the Divine Mother is?" He said, "You go without me. I have something else to do." So he went home, and he went into the special room where he meditated. Many times his father found him in deep meditation, and he would leave food for him. But Master would give it to his dog instead of eating it himself, because thought he to himself was the Lord not sufficient for him. And so he sat there, and instead of going to the temple, he looked for the Mother Kali, the Divine Mother within himself. And he prayed, and he prayed, and he talked to her aloud. You know, to refuse to believe that God can actually speak to you is to deny his omnipotence. This is true, because he can speak to you. He can speak to you in words, even as I am speaking to you now. I have heard him myself. Believe me, this is the truth before God, and he knows that I would not lie before all of you. This is really true. So he kept begging her, and he called her, "Mother Divine, how beautiful, how wonderful you are. I feel..."